Hey, my name's Nicole, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey. At first, I want to thank Chris for allowing me to bully him into letting me come back again this year. Seems to happen every single year. I remind him it's my birthday, and then I say, can I come talk? And he says, let me get back to you. And then I send him another message, hey, what about me coming to talk? Then I don't hear anything for about 3 months, and then he says, oh, yeah, there's a spot. So then I get to come. So it works out pretty good. So thank you, Chris. Like Jeannie said, I'm from St. Louis, and I'm blessed to be here today. Austin Recovery saved my life 3 years ago, and I wouldn't have it any other way other than to come back and be able to talk and give back. So I was born August 12, 1974 in Springfield, Illinois, home of Lincoln. It's pretty exciting. I grew up in a very normal household, if there is such a thing, but it was my mom, my dad, my sister, and I. We moved around a little bit when I was a kid, but, I mean, nothing, you know, crazy. Nothing terrible happened to me when I was a child to make me be an alcoholic. I just was. And so I remember when I was 10 years old, that was the very first time that I kind of, like, as I reflect back, that I kind of realized that maybe I was a little bit different. Maybe I was 11, but I don't think so. But I think I was 10. And I remember, like, I don't know, like, I did things always to get attention. And I probably because I didn't feel comfortable inside my own skin. So, like, I can remember, like, I made a retainer out of a paperclip. And, like, I told my friends, oh, I have to wear a retainer. And, you know, and I'm like, you know, who? I don't even know what that's about. And then I was like, oh, I have rubber bands for my teeth. And I'd put a rubber band right there on my teeth and wear it around my head like this. And I don't know. I was a weird kid. And I had imaginary friends. Like, it was just weird. I don't know. And so, I don't know. I just wasn't comfortable within myself. And so, yeah. So when I was 15, I got drunk for the first time, and I realized, wow, this is kind of cool. I'm sort of comfortable now with myself. It says in the big book that only an alcoholic remembers that first drunk, and that's very true. I can still tell you what I was wearing, what I was doing, where I was, and the boy I called up and drunk dialed that night. Yep, it was a good night. Yep. 15 was a little different then. We didn't have cell phones. There was no social media. Life was a little bit different. But, yeah, so I started drinking at 15. And it became a constant. It didn't end ever until I came here. But, and I mean, we were getting drunk at least once a week, if not multiple times. I guess I was a freshman in high school then at 15. So we used to bring it to school. We'd hide it in the speakers in our car. But we were good kids. Like, nobody cared. Like, our teachers would know that we were bringing in big gulps. And it had it had vodka in it. I mean, they didn't care. Whatever. I remember one teacher, Mr. T, he was our pottery teacher. And he'd be like, oh, let me have a sip of your drink. And then he was like, girls, you know, and then whatever, move on. Okay, go to speech class next, whatever. So, and I mean, I had a lot of, like, very bad instances when I was in high school. The infamous noodle night, it was Good Friday. We all got drunk off Mad Dog and cherry vodka. And, oh, yeah, it was a good combo night and some Zimas with some Jolly Ranchers. Oh, yeah, we were living the high life. Anyway, I remember I threw up so hard that noodles literally came out my nose. I probably had alcohol poisoning. It was a great, great night. And to this day, my friend Tracy Milligan, her parents recently moved out of their house, and they asked, what is this red stain been on our carpet forever? It was me and my cherry vodka. Oh, yeah. So, you know, kind of a legend. Anyway, because we were driving drunk. I mean, that's really safe. You're like 16 years old driving around town, cruising up and down Main Street in Oklahoma. Good Lord. Anyway, so, yeah, that was near death. So that was kind of scary. And then, you know, like my senior year, I don't even remember most of my senior year because I took FFA. I raised a sheep. I'm a vegetarian. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Anyway, so I took FFA, and the first 3 hours of my day were spent at home. And my parents, I had this awesome liquor cabinet. Like, it was awesome. So, like, we would get drunk and then go back to school after lunch. And, I mean, like, we just thought we were so smart and so – we were smart. I mean, like, we were really smart. But so, yeah, so I don't even know how I really graduated from high school, but somehow I did. And I went on to college. A college actually accepted me. So I went to college, and it was about 2 hours away, maybe an hour and a half, whatever, it doesn't matter, from my home. And it was the very first time that, like, I was away. And I remember sitting there, and I was like, wow, this is, like, liberating. Like, this is all kinds of freedom. And before I left, well, okay, so let me just go back here. I was very good at hiding my drunk. Like, my parents, you know, they never knew. I mean, like, I was so good at it. So they, as I was, like, being dropped off at Stuart Hall at Southwestern Oklahoma State University, my mom's, like, shouting out the car window, don't get drunk and don't get any tattoos. Well, the next weekend we're flying down to Wichita Falls to get my very first tattoo. And, of course, we're drunk, driving down the highway, going, I don't even know how fast. And so that kind of began, like, the whole, like, drinking, not going to class, drinking in class. Oh, I was already doing that from high school. But drinking, yeah, I mean, like, just the drinking became, like, nonstop. And a really major point in my life happened my freshman year in college, so I fell in love, which was awesome, and the guy was, you know, just perfect, and we were going to get married, and everything was awesome, so I went home for Christmas, and I, of course, got mad at my parents, probably because they didn't understand why I was drunk all the time, but they didn't know I was drunk because I'm so good at hiding it, so they didn't know why I wasn't ever getting up, whatever, so I came back to school early, and I remember I was so excited to see him, and, like, I kept calling him. Again, cell phones weren't around, so, like, I'm out in the hallway using the payphone, and, like, he's not answering, and I'm like, this is kind of weird. So anyway, come to find out he wasn't answering because he had gotten married over Christmas break to the girl who wasn't his girlfriend. But she was, and she was also the mother of his children that he just failed to mention all of these things, but it was okay, you know, whatever. So that caused me to drink a lot. And sleep around with a lot of people a lot, which then caused me to drink even more because I was now a whore and a drunk, so it worked out pretty well. So, yeah, I was sleeping with everybody, his brothers, his cousins, you name it, I was sleeping with them because I was going to get even, right? So that became a really dark time and a really drunk time. Yeah, so after that first year, my parents basically said, your grades, you know, if you even get a grade, because somehow, I don't know how this happened, but my report cards never made it home, and I don't know what happened there. I have no idea. But my parents never saw any grades, so about, I guess, middle of my sophomore year, they were like, if you can't be going to school, if you're not going to be going to school, you either need to come home or pay for it yourself. Well, I, of course, being the person who I am, I was like, well, I'm going to come home. I'll show you guys. Like, I can totally get a job. I don't need college. Like, you guys are losers, whatever. So I came home, and I started hanging out with the wrong people. And, of course, continually this whole entire time, like, I'm just drinking nonstop. Like, it's hard for me to explain exactly how much I drank because I don't even know how much I drank. But I know it was enough to where, like, I was constantly blacked out. I don't even know how I even held a job. Like, I was not an effective person at all. So I was hanging out with the wrong crowd of people. And then a second really big monumental thing in my life happened. I got raped. So, yeah, that kind of sucked. It was not a good time. And, again, I was drunk when it happened. And, you know, I was just hanging out with the wrong people doing the wrong thing. So that again caused me to continually drink, hide all feelings, hide all emotions, hide everything, and just be a drunk. So, you know, life was going on, carrying on, whatever. My family moved to Missouri, where I was supposed to move in Oklahoma, burned down. That was kind of a monumental thing, too. So I was forced to move. Well, I wasn't forced, but I had nowhere else to live. So I moved to Missouri, and life was going pretty good. And I think that I kind of had backed off the drinking a little bit, like not nearly as much. And, you know, then I got a job, and it was in retail, and there's a lot of drinking involved in retail. And so I was drunk again all the time. And then I met my husband, and I know that I had said that I was kind of a whore before. I wasn't really a whore because I didn't get paid, but I met my husband on a street corner in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, in shiny pants and a backless shirt. I was looking pretty fly, pretty sexy. And he pulled up beside me. This is a monumental moment, too, because it's my husband. But him and his friend pulled up beside me, and they were like, hey, you want to ride? And I was like, I don't know you guys, but if you guys have beer in the car, I'll get in. And they said, okay. So I got in the car. And, yeah, I told him that night I was going to marry him, and he agreed to get me to shut up, probably. And then the next day, he's like, I think we both said some things we didn't mean. And I was like, oh, no, I meant them. Anyway, here we are 20 years later, still together. So, yeah, he stuck with me through all of this. Anyway, so, yeah, that was a monumental night. And I think the very first time that he knew that I was a drunk, we were going to a wedding. And have I mentioned yet there were not cell phones? And he was sitting outside for like 45 minutes waiting for me while I was inside getting drunk and drunk and drunk. He was outside my house, and I wouldn't let him inside the house. And, you know, he's like, what in the hell is going on in there? And I'm like, I'm curling my hair. Leave me alone. Really, I was taking straight shots of vodka. But, I mean, it was that whole entire I don't fit in if I'm not drunk thing. So it was because I was an oddball that I didn't fit in, and I felt that way. And so, yeah, that was the very first time he ever saw me, like, shit-faced, hammered, drunk. That was a bad night. That was a real bad night. But, yeah, so then, you know, we got married. We had our first child, so on and so forth. Another monumental thing then happened. My mom had been diagnosed with breast cancer in 99. And then in 2004, it came back. And so monumental thing was my mom died. And I was the last one to be with her, and I remember that night I had driven in from Missouri, and they lived in Oklahoma at the time, and I remember sitting in the hospital room with her, and I'm watching Oprah, and there was this mom on there, and she's talking about pushing the stroller. It was about moms that are alcoholics. Anyway, and they were talking about pushing the stroller at the park and having vodka inside of a cup, and I was like, what a loser. Like, that'll never be me. Well, fast forward, and it was me. But anyway, and I remember I had to tell the doctor to give my mom morphine, which then in turn made her slip into a car. Anyway, she ended up dying. And I was there to see her take her last breath, and asking them to give her morphine put a lot of guilt on my heart, like so much so that when I went to my first confession, I told the priest that I killed my mother. That didn't go over very well. He was the first time priest hearing confession, and he was like, I don't know what to do. And but I hadn't really killed her. Well, sort of, but it does. Anyway. So after my mom died, I drank a lot. I know, same story. And then just as I was beginning to heal, my dad got cancer, and he passed away as well. And once my dad died, he died in 2013, and once he died, everything really just went downhill very, very quickly. Like, I was not able to put together 2 days sober. It was really, really bad. So all of a sudden I started losing weight. We didn't know why, and all these things were going on. Like, I lost like 120 pounds over a period of a year. No one could figure out why. We did all these tests. I was going to the Mayo Clinic. Like, it was, like, serious. Like, I was like, I'm sure I have cancer and I'm going to die. Well, Donald Trump was elected as president, and during his, like, inauguration or whatever, like, I remember being totally shit-faced and posting all over Facebook, like, I was raped, he's a rapist, and my sister's like, you were raped? What? Like, I totally drunk Facebooked, and I was like, oh my gosh. So I was like, well, I'm going to check into the hospital just because I don't want to be on Facebook, and I checked into the hospital, and they were like, huh, this is kind of weird. They were like, do you maybe drink too much? And I was like, no, what are you all talking about? And they were like, well, I don't know what the numbers are, but basically my liver was shutting down. So I was like, no, you guys don't know what you're talking about. So that went on for a little bit, and we kept going back and forth about what was going on. And like I said, I was going to go to the Mayo Clinic, and then I decided one day, I'm just going to go to rehab. Like, this sounds like a good idea, because I don't want to go back to work. So I'm just going to go to rehab. So I told my husband, well, first I posted it on Facebook, and then I told my husband that I was going to go to rehab, and he's like, maybe we should have talked about this before you announced it to Facebook, but whatever, is what it is. So I picked a place in Minnesota to go to. I flew down there. I got there. I get off the plane. I'm in the car. It's kind of weird, like the whole entire thing. Like, I got there and they told me, oh, we're riding Grand Rapids. I was like, okay, cool. I get inside the car. They're like, oh, no, we have about an hour and a half drive. And I'm like, that's not adding up. And so then I'm asking the guy a couple questions I had already asked. And I said, now this isn't run by Scientologists, is it? Kind of kidding. And he's like, well, our director is it. And I was like, turn the car around right now. Like, I'm not going anyplace. No offense if anyone here is a Scientologist. I just did not want to be in a treatment center for Scientologists. Well, they wouldn't turn the car around. So I was like, I'm going to call 911 and have y'all arrested for kidnapping. Like, I had it all planned. I mean, it was going to be like an episode of, like, Live PD. I was ready. Anyway, so they ended up turning the car around. I went home that day, and I was like, I called my husband, and he was like, fuck no, you're not coming home. And I was like, oh, I'm coming home. I was like, I have a secret checking account, and I'm buying that ticket. Anyway, so I flew home that day. You got to have your own stash. Anyway, I flew home that day, and my husband was like, oh my God, this is a nightmare. He didn't even talk to me the whole entire car ride home. And I'm like, but babe, I didn't drink at the airport. Like, I was like super proud of myself about that, because it was like a traumatic experience. Anyway, and then later on that week, or that next day, I did call around a couple different places, and then I had a friend from high school who had come to Austin Recovery. And she's like, you know, you might really like Austin Recovery. And I'm like, okay, I'll try it out. So I came here, and before I came, I had asked some pretty specific questions, and one of them being, like, how many people are here because, like, courts make them be here. Like, who am I coming to rehab with? You know, like, I'm just, like, this white lady from middle-class America. I don't know what's going on. I'm in my 40s, for God's sakes. So I get here, and the only questions, I just had a couple questions. Like, I was like, so there aren't going to be a lot of, like, prison fights, right? Like, that was, like, a big fear of mine. The other fear of mine was I was going to be raped. Like, I was like, am I going to get raped in the showers? Like, what is going to happen here? Because I didn't know. Like, I didn't know what happens. And they were like, I don't think anyone's ever been raped here. And she did tell me, though, about rehab babies, like how that sometimes happens, you know, a little bit of loving going on. I don't know anything about that. But she did tell me about that. And then she also told me there's only been a couple fights since she's been here. It was a nice nurse at intake. And I was like, okay, I trust you. So I walk into my room. Well, the first room I walk into, some lady has her boobs hanging out pumping. I don't know what that was all about. And they were like, so climb to the top bunk. And I'm like, I can't get on the top bunk. Like, I didn't even weigh but like 100, I don't know, like 13 pounds when I got here. And I was like, I don't even have enough strength to pull myself up. So then they moved me over to this room with two nice young ladies, and they kindly gave me the bottom bunk, and I was like, okay, this isn't so bad. Well, both my roommates were forced there instead of jail, and I was like, oh, okay, well, let's see what happens here. So I get there, and I don't unpack. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to be here a couple days. Like, I'm really not going to stay. Like, this isn't going to happen. So I did not unpack, and I didn't unpack, and I didn't unpack. And eventually they're like, hey, we cleaned out some dresser drawers for you. Like, you can probably unpack. We're now, like, on day 10. And I'm like, well, I'll think about unpacking, but I probably have this beat. So at about day 14, I finally unpacked, and we had a small party, and everybody clapped, and it was exciting. So and at that point, I kind of realized, okay, I'm here to stay. And then there was a fight during lunch one night, or dinner one night. That's a whole different story. Anyway, I don't know. And at that point, I was like, I'm going home. There's, like, prison fights. I don't even know what a prison fight is, and I don't know why I constantly say that. But I was like, there's prison fights. Somebody raised up a chair. I don't know what's happening. I like call my husband. I'm like in shock. They're all like, deep breaths. Count back all the cereals, you know. And I'm like, what the fuck are you all talking about? I just saw somebody raise up a goddamn chair. What are you all talking? Anyway, it was scary. But all that aside, while I was here, I did learn so much. And I mean, I learned self-worth again, and I learned that I'm worth so much, and I learned what a gift recovery can be and is, and I'm very, very blessed that relapse has not been a part of my recovery. But, you know, I mean, heck, everybody does it different, you know what I mean? And for me personally, like, I learned here the importance of meetings. I learned here the importance of getting a sponsor. I was telling Jeannie on her way in here, I just got a new home group. It's like this women's group. They're pretty chill, you know, like everybody kind of laughs a lot, which I need that in my life. But I learned most importantly, like, just to be there for myself, you know, and it's okay to be selfish during this time. And, you know, I have three kids. My kids were, well, there still are. I mean, I'm a parent, but I mean, they, you know, they were embarrassed of me and they didn't like who I was. And I can remember when my oldest daughter, in Missouri, you get accepted to high school. I don't know. It's weird. But when she got accepted to her first choice for high school, she was like, hey, mom, you know, please don't get drunk tonight because we find out. And what did I do? I got drunk. And like, I totally ruined that for her. You know, I totally ruined that moment for her. But now that I've been in recovery and I'm sober, like when she found out where she got into college, like I was able to be sober and I was able to move her into her dorms. And, you know, like I was able to do all of those things. And she tells me now all the time, she's probably still doesn't love me, but she does tolerate me. I mean, and she'll tell me that, you know, and it's something that I'm, you know, I can see that fence slowly being mended, you know, and like originally, like she's in a sorority and she did not want me to go to mother-daughter. And she made that very clear. And then she called me the other day and she's like, well, they do have this candle making class if you want to do that with me, you know, and that was like a big deal because I can see that those are, that things are mending, which is super important. And my middle daughter, like, she doesn't really talk about it at all, but I know that I embarrassed her many, many times. And, you know, I mean, it's just how I was. I was always the drunk. I was a drunk mess. And I would pick a fight with anybody and look for a fight with anybody. And, you know, I mean, it didn't matter who it was. I mean, it could be the poor lady at the nail salon that doesn't even speak English. And I'm like, bitch, I'll cut you. I'm never going to cut anybody. I don't even know what that means. I mean, like, I was like, you know, but like, I'm ready to fight. So, you know, and my poor kids. I mean, and the other day I caught myself doing that exact same thing. And I was like to my husband, I was like, yeah, I'm like to that bitch, try me, bitch. And my husband's like, have you ever even been in a fight? He's like, would you even know what to do? He's like, because that lady could kill you. And I'm like, I could handle it. I can't handle it. What am I talking about? But and then, you know, I have my youngest daughter, and she found the other day she was organizing her room. She's 14, so God knows what that means. But and she found some letters that I had written to her when I was in rehab, and she came into my room and she's like, she had little tears coming down her face, you know, and she's like, these letters make me so sad, you know. And because at that point when I was here, I didn't know if I would stay sober. Like, I can remember going, like, when I was here, like, thinking about, now when I get to the airport, I can have a couple cocktails before I get home. That way I can explain to them how great rehab was. You know, like, I didn't know if I was going to be sober. I had no clue what was going to happen, you know? And it was just like one day, just like everything just clicked. I don't know. It's hard to explain. And it's that miracle that they talk about. It's that one moment where it just all comes together. So, and because I'm sober, like, you know, they talk about service work and giving back. And that's like, it's one of the greatest things. Like, I'm getting ready to be able to go into prisons and talk. And I'm super excited about that. The jail, see? Gotta watch out for the shower. Might get raped. I don't know. But, you know, I mean, like, honestly, like, it's a gift. And it's a blessing. And every single day is a gift and a blessing. And now I get to work. So I'm what they call a certified peer specialist, like a recovery coach. And in Missouri, we have a program, it's called EPIC. So we get to go to hospitals, and after people OD, like, we're the first people that they see, and we get to get them into treatment. I mean, it's like, it's a total blessing, you know, when you see, I mean, I see all walks of life. Most of the people I deal with are homeless, but, I mean, you have some people that are, like, 80 years old and addicted to heroin, you know, and you think, it's just so sad, but it's only because I'm sober that I can do that, and that I get the gift, and that I get to be able to do that, and, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't trade anything, you know, and they say, keep doing the next right thing. And that's just so truthful, you know, and I don't worry anymore. Like, I don't worry about where things are going to come from, or I don't have to be in charge. I don't have to be in control. And you know what? I'm weird, and I'm okay with that. Like, before, I always tried to cover it up, but now it's just who I am. Oh, look, I've talked for almost 25 minutes. I'm proud of myself. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, and I thank Austin Recovery every single day, and I can't stress enough doing your meetings, going to meetings, finding people that are like you. Like, that's just, you know, as weird as I think I am, the world's a whole lot weirder than me, that's for sure. So every single day, I'm grateful and I'm blessed, and yeah, and I'm thankful to Chris for letting me come talk. And I'll never talk for an hour, ever. It doesn't matter how long I try. I can't do it. So, anyway, that's all I got.